Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
Hi again, everybody. Thanks for joining me this week. Let's see, how did I come across Linda's name? Through an email and another email, and then you kind of look around and you go, oh, okay, I'm going to check this person out, check out their website. And I emailed her, and she was kind enough to respond. Linda Zimmerman, who is a ghost investigator, is on the phone. How are you doing, Linda?
Very well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on, and you're from Chester, New York.
Yes, about an hour north of the big city.
Oh, that would be Buffalo?
No. The even bigger city of New York.
Oh, yes, that's Trenton. No, that's New Jersey? No, we're talking about New York City. And obviously you've lived in that area for quite a while?
My whole life I've been in this area.
No kidding. Is Chester kind of a small town then? Or?
It's a very small town, and there's a dairy farm one street over.
Wow.
So it's very rural, surrounded by woods.
Cool.
But in an hour I can be in Midtown Manhattan. So.
Well, that's really neat. I like that. That's kind of where I live up here. We don't have any major cities close by, but the rural part, I just love that. You like being out in the open space a little bit?
Every day. Yeah. I'm either cycling or kayaking or hiking or something.
And, yeah.
I would live outdoors if I could.
So you've been a ghost investigator. Your site, which is www.ghostinvestigator.com, you started doing this about 15 years ago, didn't you?
Yes. It wasn't what I had intended to do. I had been a research chemist, and I started writing about local history and some of the folk tales, and people just started asking about ghost stories, and I absolutely found them fascinating.
Hmm.
And I realized the best way to tell a ghost story was to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
So when people would invite me to come investigate their homes, businesses, I started doing it, and that was 15 years ago, and here I am a ton of books later and still fascinated by the subject.
Now, you have a pretty scientific background from this, what I was reading about you on your website.
Right.
So you probably take that approach, because everybody's different, I think, how they investigate these things. Some people really wanted to be there, and obviously it sells what they're doing. But you kind of take, like, I'm guessing, a skeptical, and you have a lot of electronic devices and things like that?
I do have the standard meters and cameras and infrared, and I definitely am skeptical. People exaggerate. People have, you know, imaginations. People are on medication.
Mm.
So, you know, you have to weed out whatever are the best, what seem to be the best cases, and then you have to go in with the mindset, I'm open for, you know, for whatever happens, but I'm also going to look for alternative explanations to whatever might happen.
And
try to conduct it like an experiment, almost.
Why are you so drawn to this, Linda? Why are you so drawn to this?
It's an adrenaline rush. Really. That's the short answer.
Mm-hmm.
The longer answer, it's the ultimate mystery.
Mm-hmm.
What happens after we die?
Right.
We're all going to get there someday,
hopefully
later rather than sooner.
Right.
But it's and how you live your life clearly affects what happens to you after you die. And I see this time and time again. You know, I always say that, you know, death does not improve one's personality. And if you are a mean, rotten, vindictive person in life, you're going to be a very negative spirit. And it's, you know, and there's so much regret that seems to go. People regret not having done things.
Mm.
Suicides are probably in the majority of cases that I've handled. So it's, you know, it may sound a little strange, but you really learn a lot about life.
So this has changed your opinion on life and what it is in general? Or?
It definitely, you know, not that you ever have to ask me twice to have fun, but clearly, having done this for so many years and seeing how much regret goes into the, you know, the haunting aspect of this, you know, live life to the fullest. Don't be on your deathbed and say, you know, I should have tried this, I should have done this. You know, why did I put up with this so long?
Right, do what you've always wanted to do. But, you know, I guess what I'm asking also, Linda, has this changed your belief in what maybe you believed at one time?
It has strengthened it.
Okay.
I always loved ghost stories. I always thought, you know, it was more of just an entertainment thing. But I take it a lot more seriously now that I do the historical background research. I sometimes bring in psychics. And when you see all these puzzle pieces coming together, it's like, wow, you know, there is never any excuse to waste any part of your life.
Hmm.
You know, it has definitely strengthened that. And I was actually stunned by how many cases of hauntings there are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not isolated like I used to think, you know, that it was only the broken down house, you know,
right,
on the spooky side of town. It's everywhere. It's in brand new condos,
right,
it's in old homes, it's businesses, the side of the road. If anything, you do have to live with maybe more caution, I would say, as to how you live your life. You can also look at that as more abandon as well. Like, yes, I'm going to go out and enjoy this, but the caution part would be, I'm not going to do anything really bad, you know, hurting other people.
Well, it sounds like you're talking about karma almost.
Well, in a way it is karma, but it's a lot of self-determination.
Mm. So we kind of judge ourselves.
We judge ourselves.
So you're almost like you're saying, like, if I did some lousy things in this lifetime, I'm going to kind of be more critical on myself than anybody else when I'm outside this body, and I'm going to have these regrets, and maybe I'm even going to try to make good on some of that.
That is a distinct possibility, yes. It's like, wow, I can't believe what I did. Can I make it up to these people or make it up to other people? And I think some of it is also fear. If you were brought up under a certain religion, that if you, you know, committed sins or crimes or whatever you want to call it, you're going to be punished in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of these people are afraid to move on because they think that punishment, you know, the hellfire and pitchforks,
mm-hmm,
is waiting for them.
So that's what keeps these spirits around, you're saying?
I think so, especially in the case of suicides.
Mm.
I think they, you know, for whatever reason, drove them to the suicide, but then they say, oh, you know, now I'm going to have this terrible punishment. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay in the, you know, the house where I killed myself.
I'm guessing you must have done some communicating with these spirits. I mean, have you talked to them and, like, got some kind of response from them?
I'm not a psychic, but you do this enough, you do get impressions. I have had some clear ones. But there's a couple of psychics I have worked with over the years who have just such clarity, and I never tell them anything,
mm-hmm,
when I bring them there.
Right.
So there's no bias, there's no, you know, if they tell me something, I know they could not have learned it any other way. And I'm thinking of a case where there was a very religious man. He was very seriously ill, did not want to be a burden to his family, so he committed suicide. And then those religious fears of the punishment in the afterlife kept him there, and that's what one of the psychics had told me.
Mm.
She knew nothing of the house prior to that, but she,
right,
you know, said there was a suicide victim. He's afraid to move on because of what he thinks is going to happen to him.
And so did you help him move along, or do you just kind of leave him be, or what do you do when that happens?
Well, it's, you know, again, I don't perform any ceremonies or exorcisms or anything like that. You know, prayers or just thoughts, or what what really surprised me was after having done this for a couple of years, I had people calling me saying, you know, what did you do when you were here? And, you know, which is kind of a loaded question. I'm thinking, you know, what's broken? What happened? But they're saying, you know, from the time you were here and then wrote about the story, the activity is stopped.
Hmm.
And I was like, well, all I did was an investigation, and, you know, then I'd write about it and talk about it. And I thought, maybe that's just it. They're trying to get our attention.
Mm-hmm.
They have a message to get out. And once, you know, I start talking about it, other people start hearing about it, the homeowners, of course, are more aware of the situation. Maybe that's enough to end the haunting, help them move on at that point, just acknowledging their situation and understanding it.
Yeah, maybe some people just want to be heard, huh?
It could be. A prime example of that was this old Victorian house where they were seeing an older woman and two little children. And I brought a psychic in and, again, told her nothing. And she immediately said she saw an older woman looking out an attic window and a little boy and a girl. And she kept saying this woman regretted never having children of her own. So on the other side, she was taking care of these two spirit children. Well, I wondered why this old woman was seen in the attic, so I'm crawling around this 100-year-old dust in the rafters, and I find this little book pushed way, way back, and there was a woman who had kept a diary in the back of this book.
Wow.
And she had written the words, "I ain't got no one to call me mom."
Oh.
Well, exact. The whole room was in tears when I you know, read these words. And from that moment, all of the activity in the house stopped. And we're talking about haunted activity that went on for decades.
Hmm.
But I found the book, read those words, and we empathized with her. We felt the regret that this woman had. And just telling her story and retelling, I think that was enough for her to maybe find some peace.
Let me ask you this, and this is maybe just going a little different direction, but because I kind of asked you if you did anything to help these spirits. There are people that would come in and try to move these spirits to the light. And some people will say, well, maybe even you shouldn't do that. You know, allow them to be. How do you feel about that, Linda?
I definitely think there are better places to go on to than the attic of the house you used to live in or whatever. I definitely, the way I look at it, the way I try to simplify it for people is saying, is, you know, you go to an airport and then you just sit at the gate and you never leave. I mean, that's, you know, there's another journey to take. Go to the light, move on. I think that just what I've seen, I don't think there are really any truly happy spirits.
Mm-hmm.
There may be confused spirits, you know.
Ones that don't want to let go, maybe?
Right. They're holding on to something. There's some emotional hook, something that is keeping them there. And I don't think that's good for them, and it is definitely not good for the people in the house, you know, where they are. I think it's very draining. Even a positive spirit, if you want to call it that, I think has a negative impact on the people living there.
You know, you think about, I'm sorry, Lynn, if you think about, there's so many spirits out there that have not, and probably every home at one time has somebody pass through it, I think. There's just so
right.
many out there. And, or even if a loved one passes, they'll come back and visit you. They might be around you for a while.
Right.
So we all kind of go through that. But I just wonder how many people, here's what I think about sometimes. Gee, I hope I don't get confused and stick around, because there sure seems like there's a lot of spirits that stick around after they pass. It seems like it's an overwhelming number.
It is a shockingly high number. And I have people come up to me actually, you know, fearful look in their eyes saying, what can I do to not become a ghost? I don't want to be a ghost.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, I'll just say, do whatever makes you happy and don't be mean to other people. And that's a good start.
Do you think if we understand more about what happens to us after we pass, or have a belief in something, a real strong belief, that maybe we have a better chance to move on.
I think so. I think that is absolutely the case. I mean, if you want to take something from literature, like the Christmas Carol, even back then, you had Marley's, they believed, in ghosts, and you had Marley's ghost, look at how I messed up. You have a chance, you're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
You have a chance to redeem yourself and not be like me. And I think that's, I think Dickens had it right there,
mm-hmm.
that if you're still alive, you have a great advantage. You can start doing things right. You can start living your life, the way it's supposed to be. And that's different for everybody.
Right.
There's no standard way to live your life. But if you hate your job, you hate the people, the person you're married to, if you're doing all the wrong things, what kind of a spirit will you be afterwards?
Pretty pissed off.
There you go.
We're going to take a break talking to Linda Zimmerman, and she's out of Chester, New York, ghostinvestigator.com, my guest this week on Out There.
Out there, out there, out there, out
there. Sirens, jet engines, car horns, leaf blowers. Today's world puts our sense of hearing on overload. Luckily, there are places we can go to refocus our senses. Our national wildlife refuges. It's amazing how much more you'll hear when you just take a minute to listen. Like a stirring chorus of songbirds warbling in the treetops. Or the industrious beaver slapping its tail in the mountain pond over baritone bullfrogs. Or the pulsating beat of a pileated woodpecker looking for a meal. When you hear these things, you're hearing the world the way we found it. With over 500 refuges across America, you don't have to go far to make a special connection with nature. Learn more at fws.gov/refuges. That's fws.gov/refuges.
It's out there, out there, out there, out
there. Well, she's my guest this week out of Chester, New York. It's, I guess, a fairly small town. Never heard of it, but she's probably never heard of Escanaba, Michigan either.
Right back at you.
And her name is Linda Zimmerman. She's an author, but she's a ghost investigator. 15 years doing ghost investigations, not just by yourself. There's usually, you have some other people like psychics with you as well. And
occasionally, yes. There's a friend, he's a actual police detective, Mike Warden, who's been fabulous on investigations. It's always good to have an armed cop with you on some of these places.
Yeah, that's not going to do a lot of good, though, with the spirit, is it?
Well, but when you're out in the middle of nowhere in abandoned buildings,
okay. Yeah.
Or you never know what living elements are around. But a lot of the times, actually, I will go by myself because I don't like any distractions.
Mm-hmm.
So either I'll have a couple of very trusted people with me.
How long do you stay at one of these sites if you go to somewhere?
It depends. Several hours at least. Some of these sites I will go back 4, 5, 6 times.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever spend the night at these places?
Yes, I have. I have spent the night. But I start getting a little foggy around 3, 4, 5 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
do you set up like equipment to see if you can catch anything on camera or anything like that?
Yes. Or, yes. Okay, set up camcorders all around to see. I in fact I like doing that. Setting up camcorders, audio equipment, meters in a room, and then going to a different part of the building, so that if anything shows up on camera, I know it's not me sneezing in the background or creaking floorboards.
Do you think activity, does it seem to happen more at night, or is it happening all the time?
It does happen all the time. I think at night it's more noticeable, especially for people who work all day. They're not generally home at night. There's a lot more activity, distractions.
Hmm.
I think at night when it's quiet and dark, it's just easier. And it depends. Some things only show up during the day at a certain time. Some things are all the time. Some things are only at night. So there don't seem to be any particular limits.
Do you have a story or two that you wouldn't mind sharing with my listeners about just something really scary, weird, crazy that you investigated?
Yes. My absolute crazy, scariest, weird one was a museum called the Columns Museum in Milford, Pennsylvania. Their claim to fame is they have the flag that was draped over the presidential box at Ford's Theater when Lincoln was assassinated.
Mm.
And that flag was actually bunched up and placed under Lincoln's head as a pillow, and Lincoln's blood stains are on that
no
flag.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's remarkable. But it's a small historical society museum, and investigated a couple of years ago. I maybe had taken two steps into the building when I just had this clearest impression of this woman with upswept hair, puffy sleeve dress. I mean, coming in so loud and clear. And I'm trying to set up my scientific gadgets and equipment, but she was really in my head. And I was getting names and all kinds of impressions. And at one point in the night, I'm looking, they have one of those old-style hair curling machines that kind of looks like a torture device with all these wires.
Right.
And my friend Mike was there, and he was down the hall, and as I'm saying to him, Mike, you have to see this hair curling machine, I felt a finger go up the back. I was wearing a baseball cap. I felt a finger go up the back of my cap and move around in my hair.
Hmm.
And I just froze, and I said, you know, what's behind me? Did I back into a plant stand or a coat rack? And he said, no, there's absolutely nothing there, and the feeling left. But I to be touched like that was unbelievable. And then later in the night, I kept thinking, you know, this woman knows who I am. She touched me. She read me like a book. And I heard the rustling of old, what are those, like taffeta skirts?
Mm-hmm.
Going towards the back of the museum. It's in this big old house. So I said to Mike, there is something she wants me to find to prove that, you know, she's here and she knows who I am. So I go running back to this room, and it's an office. And I thought, great, you know, what is she going to do, send me a fax?
Mm-hmm.
And there's, Mike points out these file cabinets. I happen to open up a drawer, I pull out a file, and I'm flipping through thousands of articles, and there's an article about haunted sites. I thought, well, let me see if there's any other places I'd be interested in. And at the bottom of this article is a paragraph about me and my work.
Really?
And I was just absolutely stunned. There had to be 10,000 articles and
right.
books and things. And I opened the one drawer with the one folder that has an article with my name in it, describing, you know, me as a paranormal investigator.
And so she wanted to prove to you that she was there, and that was
exactly.
her. But what else? I mean, is she just trying to, like you say, sometimes they want somebody to hear them, but she doesn't want to leave that place, it sounds like.
What happened, she was very devoted to her husband, and 17 years after his death, she was still in mourning clothes.
Mm.
And she lived nearby, and when she died, all of her objects were brought to the museum, including her mourning clothes, which are still on display. And I think she is still so attached, so hooked to that grief.
Mm.
And that's really what defined her for almost two decades, you know, the grieving widow. And I think she is still there to tell the story of her grief. And also, she just was so devoted to her husband, you know, to kind of still, she was always trying to promote his work. He was a writer. I think she's still trying to do that, you know, from the other side. She was the clearest, strongest spirit I had ever encountered. So the combination of the impressions, being touched, that is very creepy, and then having her lead me to an article with my name on it, how do you beat that?
I don't know. That's pretty good, though. That's a pretty good story. So have you, like, seen apparitions before, too?
I have seen some very dark, shadowy figures. The only thing I saw clearly that looked like a real person was in Gettysburg.
Mm.
It was on an anniversary of the battle at the wheat field, and there was this Confederate soldier in the middle of the field walking towards me, and I thought, you know, everybody's wearing reenactor clothing there, so it's nothing unusual. But I thought, well, he's got to be the worst reenactor I've ever seen because everything's too bright and shiny. It was almost like everything, the sun was like reflecting off of everything. And he should look, you know, grubby and dirty. And I was doing an article on reenactors at the time. I said, well, let me interview him anyway. So I bent down to get my notebook off the floor of the car. And when I sat up, he was gone. I said, my husband saw him, and we both said, oh, no, he fell down. So we're waiting for him to get up. He doesn't. We went running into the field. We went everywhere. He just disappeared
from the middle
of this field.
And, you know, you hear so many stories about Gettysburg, about what people have witnessed. And you know what's really cool about it, too, I think, Linda, to me, and what I try to do with my show, is if you can connect to somebody personally that you know. And there was a friend of mine who I work with, and his, I don't know if it's his brother, I can't remember exactly, but they went down there, and they actually smelled the smoke of gunfire and things like that, and you hear things and so forth. So there's a lot that goes on in that area. You have a book that actually details some of those kind of places, right?
Yes, it just came out hot off the presses. It's called America's Historic Haunts, and it includes sites in all 50 states. Obviously, they're historic sites, but they're not only battlefields and museums, but they're restaurants and B&Bs, so you can eat, sleep, and visit ghosts in all 50 states. And people always ask me, where can I go to experience a haunting? Well, no matter where you are in the country, here's your chance to visit these sites, all open to the public. And, you know, you can't guarantee a ghost is going to come out, but these are very haunted locations. And if you like to travel, if you just even like to armchair travel, I think you would definitely enjoy this book.
You know, I'm saying, if people ask me, where can I go to experience a ghost? Your basement or somewhere upstairs in your attic. There probably is a ghost in your house and you don't even know it.
Right. There's a lot of haunted places out there, but obviously some are more haunted than others.
Some are more haunted than others.
Yeah, clearly sites of tragedies and places that are hundreds of years old have a much better chance.
So I've heard this term before, and I'm guessing you're familiar with it, and you maybe use this to define residual haunting. Do you believe in that? Does that exist?
Yes, I think there are different types. There's some, it's almost like a tape loop. It's just a certain
energy
that just keeps repeating. There are very interactive ones, like this woman at the museum who clearly was trying to communicate. And then there are just these residual energies, images that I don't think are active spirits in the location, but kind of imprints that are left over. And if you are sensitive enough and under the right circumstances, you will just glimpse these things.
Do you think there are darker ones, too, that are not so fun to be around? I mean, not just ones that passed away and were mean, but darker spirits that have been around for quite a long time?
There probably are. I whatever you want to call them, there is good and evil in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a spirit world, there's a good and evil spirit world. So what I have always encountered, I believe to have just been ghosts per se.
Mm-hmm.
But I know there are some people who claim demonic forces. I don't get involved in that type of thing.
Yeah, me neither.
Not interested.
Right. Ghosts are enough to deal with.
Exactly. My day-to-day life is enough to deal with.
You ever have any of them follow you home?
Oh, let me knock on wood. Not yet.
Hmm.
I try to, before I go home, I just, you know, visualize clearing myself off, saying, okay, everybody, you know, you're not coming home with me. When I get home, I throw all my clothes in the wash. I take a shower. I try to take a complete mental break from it. But I know of people who have had briefly there was a tomato sauce factory where a boiler blew up in the early 1900s and killed a man. And I know of, it was actually a policeman who thought, oh, it'd be cool to take a brick from this factory.
Uh-oh.
He's driving across, he put the brick in the back seat, he's driving across a bridge, and he looks in the rearview mirror, and there's the figure of a man in his back seat. He stops the car on the bridge, takes the brick, and throws it in the river, and continues on.
And you know, you hear that a lot. I mean, like, especially, a good example is like, you don't take those stones from over in Hawaii, over
right,
by the volcano. Yeah.
Right.
And people have had strange things happen or seen things. And I could believe that. It just seems like sometimes they're connected to a physical part of a building or whatever it might be.
Right.
Or sometimes, like, you go to a rummage sale and you buy an old doll. And then all of a sudden, strange things start happening at your house.
Exactly. You know? And it's not a coincidence that a lot of antique stores have activity.
Mm.
You know, they can attach to, you know, I've heard that ghosts can attach to a person, a place, or a thing. And somebody bought an old bed and started seeing a child and having all kinds of terrible things. They found out more about this bed, and a little boy had died in it.
Uh-huh.
You know, in this antique bed. He died of some lung disease. So you have to be very careful. And it, you know, I always tell people, don't take anything from a haunted site.
Hmm.
Or if you are antiquing and, you know, there are some of these, you know, weirder oddities, like, you know, things that people had on when they were killed, or, you know, things, you know, pieces of caskets and embalming tables, leave them in the store. Don't look for trouble.
No, unless you don't mind that at all. Don't mind some visitors in the house. Now, these spirits, I've got to believe this has affected your position. Like you say, it strengthened your belief in the afterlife. Do you think every one of these spirits eventually goes on?
I hope so. I think for some of them, it's a very, very long time. If you look at, you know, the ghost stories in England from, mm-hmm. you know, some of them are 400 or 500 years old. That's a long time. Maybe it
yeah.
doesn't seem so long to them.
Because there's really no time at that point, right?
I don't know. I think eventually, sometimes you hear of when a house is physically changed. It can break a haunting. It can also stir a haunting up.
Mm-hmm.
But if a place burns down, if something is destroyed, you know, I think some of them eventually do move on their own. I think if something physically changes, it can happen. And then also if, like what I'm doing, you know, researching it and telling their story, that might be enough. But I think it's possible they're there for a very, very long time.
Now, if somebody is listening to this and they're having something in their home, are you the type of person somebody could call or contact? And you, I don't know if you'd be, maybe you can give them some advice or lead them in a direction. I'm guessing you can't go to everybody's house all across the country.
No, I can't. And like I said, I don't perform clearing ceremonies.
Right.
If you actually just do some internet searches on how to clear a home, I would definitely recommend that course of action, or try to get in a psychic or you know, your clergyman, something along. But your whole attitude, people feed ghosts
mm-hmm.
with their energy.
Absolutely.
And if you are fearful and feeding into it, or, you know, I see people, it takes over their lives, and they're so into it. And I remember telling this one woman, I said, I'll tell you what, you've got footsteps, you've got this, you've got that. And it was a dark, dreary place. I said, paint your walls yellow, open these curtains, put the radio on, go out and do things, just be positive. And she was blaming her whole life, everything bad happening on the spirits. She couldn't get a job, her personal relationships. And, I mean, I just threw my meters in the bag. I said, you can feed into this or you can get your life back.
Right.
And, you know, it was very different for me, you know, because I don't usually tell people what to do, but this one I was a little fed up. and she brought light into the house. She, you know, she had her favorite music playing. She was getting it. 2 weeks later, she got a job that she had always wanted. She was seeing friends again. And she really, she said, I did get my life back. And maybe there's still spirits there, but she's not letting them rule.
You know, and it's like, this is a greater lesson, too, of everything. Your attitude probably affects the majority, would you say, the majority of everything around you.
Absolutely.
And so those, not only does this affect living a better life or if you got spirits around you, but those of you that say, well, I've heard this many times, Linda, I never see any ghosts. How come I don't? Because maybe you don't want to.
Right.
Maybe you don't have the attitude of being truly open-minded. It seems like when you open up your mind completely and you don't try to force it is when things start to happen.
Exactly.
And that's when I've had some strange experiences. And then when I go, well, I believe it. How come it doesn't happen to me? Stop thinking that. Stop thinking how come it doesn't.
Right.
It will. It will happen. And then, you know, sometimes we just don't pay attention. Maybe there are things that have happened that we're not even aware of. And now if we slow down and look at it more closely, and you learn that as you get older, as I did, I started paying attention to the little things and going, now, wait a second. This is out of place. This shouldn't be here.
Right.
And I've had several communications from not only those that passed on, well, mainly those that passed on, but I think one time we lived in a place where there was a fella who died in the house, and he was communicating with us a couple of different times. Didn't let it bother either one of us, my wife and I. We just said, oh, I saw his spirit leaning over her bed one time. And I just was walking by, and it's early in the morning when I have to get up to go on the radio. And I'm walking by the bedroom, and she's still sleeping, obviously, downstairs. And I'm sneaking back to put my clothes in the hamper. And I'm going, just got out of the shower and whatever. And I look over in the bedroom, and there's this thing, torso, full body, leaning over her. Now, part of me thinks it was the guy in the house.
Right.
But also, prior to the two of us getting together and moving in together, she had been having these dreams about somebody being very frisky with her at night. And I'm thinking this may have been a spirit that latched onto her.
Yes.
What do they call them? Incubus? Succubus?
Right.
And once I came into the picture, he realized he couldn't compete with the real thing.
Oh, no, not a real man.
Because I was, you know, that same thing is I was getting ready to leave. Now, this is right around that time before I saw him over her.
Right.
And I was in the shower, and I hear clanging around and all this stuff. And I'm going to work, and somebody slams a coffee cup down. And I knew something was there. And so we were never afraid of it. But it's either one or two things. It was the fellow that passed away. My whole point on it is, this happened back in the late 90s, and that's when things started to peak for me, and I kept seeing stuff more and more and more after that. My whole life before that, when I was in my early 30s and 20s, none of that stuff happened, or very little of it happened.
Right.
And it's because either A, I didn't take the time, or B, I truly wasn't as open as I thought I was, or I was trying to force it.
Right.
And you just allow it to happen, and it seems to come forward. And maybe like you said, too, you and I were talking prior, something you develop.
Oh, it's night and day with me from when I first started this to, you know, a couple of hundred investigations later. It's like any other skill. You develop it. And so if you, everybody is psychic. If you don't think you are, you're just not paying attention. I mean, how many people have been thinking of their, you know, cousin Joe, and 2 seconds later, the phone rings, and it's Cousin Joe
right.
who called you in here. And you say, oh, what a coincidence.
Right.
No.
And the thing is, Linda, here's where I see the difference, too, and I'll see if you agree with this. You have to start believing it. Most people don't. And that's why they don't experience more of the same, because they, like you say, oh, it's just a coincidence. And when you start to believe, that's an admission. You go, okay, I do have the ability.
Exactly.
And then you start trusting what that little voice is telling you more and more.
Right.
And sometimes it might just be you talking in your head. But other times it's really like a psychic intuition, picking up on something.
Right. Everyone has that intuition, and just pay attention to it. And, you know, go with it because it can help you in a lot of different aspects in life.
Right, not just dealing with ghosts and spirits. Might even save your life sometime.
Exactly.
You can sense and pick up on danger or things around you. Linda, we're out of time, but again, your website, ghostinvestigator.com. Anything else you want to add?
No, it's just been a pleasure speaking with you.
Well, we can always do this again. And I've got your email, and if you don't mind, maybe a few months down the road, if you have another book or anything else that you want to talk about. I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.